bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by Wired Tree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the After Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hi, everybody. That's me.
And Justin Robert Young.
Hey, friends.
So we're going to talk about a couple things here, kind of relevant and whatnot. And one of the things I wanted to talk about was I'm going to give everybody a 24-hour challenge.
No?
Okay. Go ahead.
Here's the way it works. New Year is coming up, right? We're in the last stretches of 2019. And, you know, I say this every year, but man, the year went by fast. And I sort of center my year around my birthday because I'm an egomaniac, but I always like to have when my birthday comes around and go like, what did I do this year? How do I feel like, did I do more this year? Did I not do so much more this year? Whatever. And sometimes it's hard to take on big projects because you have a lot of the other responsibilities that were stem from other projects you did. And we talked about this at length at Weird Things. We don't really need to go into here, but I gave myself a 24-hour challenge, which was to try to write an entire novel in 24 hours. Not a good novel, not a novel that necessarily should be published, but just to write a novel. And I chose this goal because it was pretty well suited to my skills. I'm very good at outlining. I've been playing around dictation, and I thought, like, man, I think this is doable. It's going to push the limits of what I can do, but it is a doable project. And 24 hours later, I can say, fail or done, or did a valiant effort, but I learned a lot from it. And I think those kinds of projects are neat. And I would like to challenge people out there. Maybe you've thought about doing a podcast. And my challenge is, hey, make 6 episodes tomorrow of that podcast. Make 6 episodes tomorrow of this podcast you want to do. Keep them short, whatever. Challenge yourself to make 6 episodes of a podcast tomorrow. Maybe you've thought like, hey, I want to do a YouTube video, whatever. Like, hey, spend tomorrow making a really good YouTube video that's of the quality of like some graphics and other stuff, maybe learning the whatever you need to do. Maybe you want to write a book. Don't try to write a book tomorrow, but maybe, you know, write a novella, write a short story, you know, find a project to do in the next 24 hours that in 24 hours you can say, this is a complete thing. I did this thing. I made this thing.
Yeah, because even at the end of the day, if you don't get it, you'll know the things that you need, the things that take more than 24 hours, the things that you're deficient in, the you know, it's a trial by fire. I mean, it's trial by fire. It's a dress rehearsal, and that's important.
Well, and you know, the other thing is that once you have a product, you can, like, all right, there are two major pitfalls that I've found for myself in terms of creation. The first is getting started. What do I want to do? What the idea is? You can choke on a million details there and just not go forward. You can talk yourself out of it. But before you've done anything, it's very easy to talk yourself out of doing anything at all. The second is once you look at what you've done and you don't like it. And that is the second level pitfall that I think is maybe more important than getting over the first one. Because what Andrew's saying here is just go do it. And then the second level, once you've done it, is embrace your critical eye. Embrace what you're looking at. Embrace how you think you could make it better. And then apply that to the next thing that you're doing. Apply that to something else. What I've been telling folks who ask me about podcasts, they're like, oh, well, I want to start a podcast. What should I do? And it's like, well, to be totally honest with you, I would agree with Andrew that, you know, do a bunch of them in one day, but I would add this caveat. Do a bunch of different ones, or at least take different takes on it, and just go, and when the cost is zero, before you go to a friend and say, hey, sit down with me and help me out with this, before you do a bunch of stuff, or if you have somebody that wants to come along with you for this process, then prototype. Do a bunch of different versions, and man, you are going to find out immediately what you like and what you don't like, and where what strengths you've perceived that actually don't exist.
Yeah, I mean, even like, you know, We do a lot of podcasts here, and most everything we do live to tape, or I'm editing, or we've got someone else doing editing, and so it kind of pulls. Once you get into the groove, like, you can feel comfortable being out of that, but that's something that takes a lot of time and a lot of a lot of trial by fire, you know, but not, it's, we make it look easy, I guess is what I'm trying to say in so many words, but you really do have to listen to your own stuff, because you might not realize, and no one's going to tell you. People aren't going to tell you, oh, this thing's weird. Oh, this thing's off. Like, unless you sit them down and ask them, or you listen to it yourself, you're not going to get that really important critical feedback early on.
Well, and that that's the biggest difference for me, is just being able to look at something and be like, I don't like it, and then having my first reaction then be, cool, what do I like? If I were to redo it, how would I do it again? Or if I realize, I think what Andrew's project with the book was great, because it's like, all right, like, you consider yourself, and you are a very good outliner. So let's test that. Let's see how good can you outline really fast. And then if we run through it as fast as we can, how strong does that outline hold up? And like, boy, I found out with Raise the Dead, part of the biggest thing that I had to change was my tone of voice. I realized that it reminded me a lot, actually, of somewhere. I mean, God knows if it still exists, but there are very, very, very early prototype versions of Andrew and I doing the Magic Week in Review podcast. Mm. And I remember so much just like, I listened to a lot of talk radio, and I've loved this medium my entire life. And I remember just thinking before we started, like, this is easy. I have it in my own head exactly what I should sound like. I know exactly how I can bring this kind of like a tone of voice to life. And I listen to it and I'm like, that is bad. That is awful. And so obviously I'm in a different place in terms of an audio performer now than I was then. But I listen to it and I'm just like, something's not right. Like, there's an element of this writing. There's an element of this of presentation that isn't right, and it wound up affecting all of it. You know, the initial versions of Raise the Dead were a lot more there's a lot of cursing, there were a lot of adult themes kind of just casually discussed, there was a little bit more of me trying to put on a bit of a persona and character, and ultimately it wasn't until I listened to it and understood, like, and you have to go through the process of like, oh, this is bad, that you realize, oh, well, holy crap, that this is something that I do need to re-record it. But now I know what I like. Now I know what I want.
And that kind of stuff. Yeah,
I thought the Australian accent was a little bit weird, to be honest with you.
And that kind of stuff is something that people, random listeners are not going to spontaneously tell you. Or they're going to be it's going to be the inflammatory people like, I hate the way he speaks. And because it's been delivered that way, you're going to completely discount it. And so that's something where, again, you need to hear yourself and realize, oh, would I listen to this? Is this how I would want to listen to this? How would I want to listen to this differently? Because that becomes, that's a high level problem.
I would even say that it's not, there's how you'll improve upon the craft, but I would say kind of the point of the 24-hour challenge in some ways is just to make a thing. So you understand the idea that you can make a thing before you will learn a lot, before you worry about improvement and put yourself in the, I hate everything I do sort of cycle, which we all go through. There's just a certain kind of value to, because once you go through and go, oh, I made six episodes in a day. I don't like them, but man, I did them in 24 hours. I could go do this Saturday and do it again and do it right.
Yeah.
And that's a big step for me. A lot of times why I make, writing a book in a day for me is like, I don't know what I'm doing with it. But like, it becomes less precious. It becomes less precious. So I'm not worried about trying to improve or whatever. And I'm not going to go back and try to like, how can I make this better?
And that, yeah. that mindset is so important of like, I'm starting a thing and I need to like, you need to like kill your darlings, but you need to do it before they're even born. You need to be hands off with this thing to some degree in some elements. You have to have some detachment so you're not letting your love of the idea, your love of this thing that you've got, this thing that you bought, this thing that you commissioned, whatever, have that cloud you or anchor you if that ends up being a weak part or something that can be improved.
You know, there is one of my favorite YouTube series right now is done by this dude, Kenny Beats, who is a top hip hop producer, but he does this series called The Cave. And it's just his own studio where he brings in each episode a hip hop or rap act comes in and they literally he makes a beat in an hour and they freestyle on top of it and they get a song out of it. And some of these songs, I mean, one of them wound up going viral on Spotify. Like there is an element of excitement that comes from it. But the thing that's really exciting is, you know, in the year since he started doing these, some of the songs have shown up on the albums of the performers that were on there. Wow. Like, and the point is, the main the dude who runs it, Kenny, is like reticent to put anything out because he's like, no, it's not as good as what I would do over, a week if I were working on it, a month if I were working on it. But it's good enough, and it's found a huge audience, and that's like really, 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 really important. And it's part of why I love it is that it embodies the spirit of let's just go. How do things really get made? Like in all we totally wrap creation in this ego enforced artist myth of. Everything needs to be right and it's spiritual and I'm really communicating with the audience telepathically. No, that's a lot of things. That's how we mythologize our history after it's done. You want to know how everything gets done? People do it. Go and do a thing. Everything else that we've talked to, and Andrew's right. Everything else that we've talked to, like that's doing it is buying your admission into the privilege of being able to refine your work, but that nobody gets in this building unless you make something first. So make something.
I love that neon sign that was in back of him on there.
Yeah, that's his logo or his thing is dots. Don't overthink S word.
Yeah, and this is something that like the music industry did figure out and is kind of resurging, like mixtapes, right? Like I know. So Charlie XCX is a pop singer. She had a new album come out this year, I think. But a few years ago, she put out two different mixtapes, and she was saying, like, it was so easier to get people in the studio if I just told them, oh, it's just a mixtape. Like, people will just come in and just do whatever and made, I'd say, probably better stuff because there's not this... there's a specific word in music for this, and it's a mixtape, where it's not exactly the real thing. It's shaped and it's as long as the real thing, but it's not the real thing, and it lets you be more fun. In music where you have such a big executive element of between the business and the creator. You know, a mixtape is outside of that in a lot of ways. Contractually, your mixtape probably may not count for your record deal, may be outside of all of these other things.
That used to be the big thing about it is that, you know, a mixtape, especially in hip hop and stuff, was there because you could freestyle over beats you didn't own. You could, play demos for songs that you haven't cleared. You could maybe go outside of your current mode. You could experiment with new styles. That's where a lot of the diss tracks and battle kind of stuff landed, because while diss tracks are very lurid and fun, they're very rarely the best songs ever. They're there to deliver a message, not necessarily be a fantastic piece of music. But I think those are great examples, because we're in a world now where you can, like, you've never been closer to releasing something on in any means.
Yeah.
Right. The big thing is learning how to put it together and knowing when it's good. And we have 9 and 12 here in the chat. It says, I got both my shows on hiatus. I think I need this more than I can imagine. It's been a source of joy, and now I'm fearing fading. Let me just tell you this. Shows being on hiatus, you can look at them as a bummer because one thing didn't work out or the other. But man, is it a gift. Man, is it a gift that you can then take that opportunity to make something rad, make something a new, learn, take all those lessons and just apply them somewhere else. I'll tell you what, his next, I mean, whatever happens with Raise the Dead is going to happen, right? And hopefully it's not a totally forgotten about thing. But if I do a season two, God, am I going to be able to do it so much faster and so much better.
Yeah.
Like the lessons that I've learned, and I found that with every podcast that I've ever done, is the next one is bigger and better, because especially repeating ones that are kind of there forever, boy, it's hard to steer that ship once it's going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you really, it's a challenge, because everybody, especially if you're dealing with a lot of people, everyone's got their own idea of what it is. And either you have to kind of like be the, you're the captain now kind of situation, or you have to get a quorum, and quorums very rarely produce kind of change, even incremental change that goes farther.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my Trending Lemon, the interview / news show that I was doing for about 6 months this year, has been on hiatus for 3 months now. And in the meantime, it's, you know, I've been able to spend more time doing like the streaming stuff on the channel and get in touch with the community a little more. It's just been a weight off of my back, because that was booking guests every week and pulling news stories. And while I was being really flexible with the format, I was also having trouble. I liked that I would be able to change it however I wanted to suit me, but it also just meant that I didn't have a structure, right? It meant that, like, it ended up me doing two things instead of one thing, which was now I'm doing this interview, half interview and half news of the week, and that's tough. And if I started the show over again, I think I would do it differently. And I'm not 100% sold on what I'm going to do with the show, with it being on hiatus right now. But the longer out I get from it, I mean, I don't know.
I think it's very, part of the reason why I like the whole idea of the 24-hour thing is that there's a completion. There's a point at which you say, in 24 hours now, I will have the things I intended to make. I don't think you do this like, oh, I'm going to start a book tomorrow. Like, no, don't do that. Because if you're not going to finish within 24 hours, it's not going to do things that you can get done, because you want to have things that are completed. And my advice to you, Bryce, unsolicited, is you did season one of Trending Lemon.
Right.
And you can think about what you do for season two. It didn't fade. You did a season. You did a run of something. I think that's an attitude we need to start thinking about a lot more in podcasting is, mm-hmm. There's some things which will be weekly. Like, this is going to be a weekly show because it's been weekly forever and we don't know what else to do. Some shows are daily, particularly if you have the time to do it. But for other people, because that's that fear of, like, sometimes I go like, oh, do I want to do a podcast? I'm like, I don't want to be doing this 5 years from now. I don't want to be doing that forever. But if you
every
said,
week,
oh, do you want
week
to do
after week? And yeah,
I met a bunch of people at TwitchCon. Right. And so I connected with a bunch of people that also do political streaming. And one of the ladies DM'd me. And she was like, hey, I've never really done a podcast, but I've always wanted to. I know that you do a bunch of them. Would you be interested in doing a podcast with me? And it's one of those things that I feel like I answered even maybe more harsh than I wanted to, because I never heard back from her. But it's one of those things where, from my perspective, boy, that's like the only thing you can't say to me. Right. Like, you can say, do you want to be on my podcast? Do you want to guest on my podcast? Can you help me with the podcast? Can you appear weekly as a guest on the show, I'd be more into than do you want to do a podcast. But if it was like, hey, I'm looking to do a six episode kind of thing, you know, I'd be a lot closer to it. I'd be into it a lot more, because in my mind, all I see is just like the killing fields of like more of my schedule that I already know. I can invalidate the start time of this show because my laundry went long, you know, like that's how close everything is kind of scheduled. And so I can't think about that. But if it's like, oh, I want to do a short run thing. Oh my God. I from here on out, I think that's the only stuff I'll be doing is run. So I can't imagine inking to do something that is weekly anymore.
And we are very aware of burnout now, right? Like, this is a big deal on YouTube, and there's not a solution for it on YouTube. There's not a big solution for it on YouTube, because people on YouTube are equally making stuff with very small teams or by themselves, and making YouTube videos just ends up being a little more arduous and a little less, there's a little less return on time, right? The same amount of time it takes to make an hour of podcast versus 5 minutes of a YouTube video can sometimes be about the same or different. You know what I mean. Like it's so dense and requires so much time to make YouTube stuff. And with YouTube, if you take time off, you know, it's not just the people who choose to be your fans or subscribe to you. It's like, okay, well, does YouTube as a platform now see you differently because you missed a week, because you've been gone, because X, Y, or Z? I mean, people on Twitch talk about like, if I take a week off, I'm going to lose X amount of subscribers. But that's a platform that is at least pretty straightforward in terms of when you are on, you're on. But we have an understanding of burnout now and being seasonal. I mean, we're going to see it more and more.
I think that, because I've dealt with that a lot, where like, I do, you know, like, oh, you want to do YouTube, you got to do it every day. You want to do the social media, got to do it every day. And I think, yes, that there probably is an optimum algorithm of continuous reinforcement to do that. But I am not designed for that. I don't have the infrastructure for that.
Right.
And the answer is then not to do it. The answer isn't to not do it. The answer is, like, I'm very infrequent on social media, and I know the less I post, the less likely I'm going to have reach. But I still have some reach. I still get a hold of some people. And if I spend that downtime making something that's so much better and having something really cool to say, then it's probably better than posting every day. Then it becomes special. You know, some of my favorite YouTube series, you know, like, I love Defunctland, you know, and Defunctland I think is doing extremely well. And they do season one and they do season two and they go away and they come back. And I think it's a brilliant strategy, because rather than the guy who does it trying to do every single week, you know, he's able to come back and do really high quality episodes. He's getting, you know, over 1 million views. More people are watching these videos than are probably watching a lot of Nat Geo shows, you know? And I think that, like, the trade-off is, yep, algorithmically right now, it maybe won't benefit you as much, but the other side of it is the quality will be better and you will end up getting more viewers. So I'm like, do seasons. And some people will tell you, oh no, but like, the game's different. And that's a thing, oh man, that's a thing I want to talk about too. And it's something I say about writing about, like, the concept of the new game. And the new game is the idea, there are people who understand how things work or understand part of how things work, and there are people who do not, are people who resist it and have not realized the rules changed. We saw that in our last election. We see that with certain personalities who do extremely well, who get it. You know, you get, you know, a guy like Ninja comes out of, you know, a scene that did not exist a few years ago and would seem like a joke in Idiocracy, but is a media friggin' giant within a certain, you know, sphere. Kanye, okay, my friend of mine went to go see Kanye West's opera, which was put on last week, right? Yeah. The amazing thing about this opera is it did not exist 3 weeks before. You know, he came up, he read some scripture in the Bible and is like, Nebuchadnezzar means not just the spaceship and the Matrix. Man, I'm doing an opera on this. Brings in Vanessa Beecroft to come in and direct this, puts together in Kanye. Love him or hate him, The guy is a brilliant musician, knows how to put things together and puts them together quickly, and he gets the new game. He puts together an entire opera in 3 weeks, which is an absurdity. Mm-hmm. Yet you can do that. You call up Ticketmaster, you say, hey, I need you guys to set up the ticket sales for this. Hollywood Bowl, it's open, whatever. He has this. I mean, it's just insane. Mm-hmm. That like there are people who are playing this whole new game because they understand. They'll hear like, oh, you're supposed to do it this way. Are you?
Yeah.
Are you really?
Right. And I think a seasonal model is what we're going to see more of that, especially in smaller creators, just because either that or like just getting away from the idea of weekly. I think even bi-weekly would be a big step away from kind of I do think you need to be, you know, you don't want to be out of people's minds for too long, which is why weekly is so attractive, but you have to set limits or you have to set the pace. You know, we're going to do 2 episodes a month. We're going to do an episode. We're going to have about an episode a month, something like that. You know, our friend Mikey Newman does Movies with Mikey, and that's on those are long video essays that he writes and edits and puts together. Yeah. And so that's not every week, but he keeps people in tune with like, hey, I'm working on this next move on this movie. Here are these other shows that we're doing. Here's when the new Movies with Mikey is dropping. And it's you are in touch and you are in the conversation about when something's happening. And so it's not weekly. It's not regular, but you're not out of mind.
Yeah, no, I think that there are some people that I come from the publishing world where if you put out a book once every 18 months, that's considered regular enough. And I try to increase that, but like, you know, I'm a little frustrated because it's just the way that works, that like my next Theo Kray novel doesn't come out until 2021.
Wow.
I think you can have a lot more time between stuff. And if you're doing quality stuff, like there are people who just have a way to reach them. Like we talked about before, email lists, man, build up your email list. Hey, you like what I do? Get on my email list, and sometimes it's a delight to hear, I haven't heard from this person in 2 years, and they've got a new thing. Buy right away, you know?
You know, there is just a fundamentally different way that we have to look at how to communicate with an audience now. Because, you know, to go back to, like, mixtapes, like Bryce was talking about, I was reading a fascinating thing. I think it was around the time that the Black Panther album came out, the soundtrack to the Marvel movie. That was talking about, this was like the first return to big soundtracks. That soundtracks used to be these gigantic, very helpful tools in the music industry, because in a world before everything could be uploaded immediately and you could get it immediately and you could push singles like that, this was the way that, you know, gigantic bands in between albums could make sure that they interacted with their audience. And it was an acceptable way to do it. Like between, you know, two big U2 albums, U2 had a big hit on the, like, one of the Batman soundtracks or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that was gigantic. And now it's like, what we have to think about as creators is like, all right, well then what is that? You know, I'm always going to have a relationship with the politics audience because I talk about politics multiple days a week. But for the Raise the Dead audience, that's going to be different. I'm going to have a different relationship with them. And the relationship I'm suspecting I will have with them is them saying, cool, I really like this. I might listen to it 2 or 3 times. I'll recommend it to my friends. Let me know the next time you've done something like this. And that's huge, is figuring out that nexus of what you like, what the audience likes, and how often they want it. And how often they really want it, right? Because I'm sure some people would be like, oh, cool, do a Raise the Dead every week. But they wouldn't really like it. They really want the big kind of thing. So we'll see. But in general, those are the things that I think you really have to think about. Because it's not necessarily content every day. Although for many people it is. But boy, for me, God, it would have to be a special project for me to do another weekly thing at this point.
Yeah. I mean, if for you, I could very easily see you doing a history and pictures sort of thing, like putting stuff up and giving a context kind of thing. That's like, oh, if you want to, you know, like if you want to have, because that's the sort of thing you could spend a Saturday and, you know, figure out a month's worth of stuff. And that would be sort of a fun way to sort of like, here's my brand. This is what I do. This is a different form of it. And, you know, but
yeah.
I just don't be afraid to pick up things that you can just say, I'm going to do X number of, but like, man, the 24 hour thing, just pick a thing that you'll be done in 24 hours. It could be anything. Do you have a theme park you like? Go there, make a documentary about it. You know, go pick something you like, your favorite. It could be anything. If you have sort of interest in creating something, just, you know, it's very, very fun to push yourself and see what happens.
Yeah.
Cool. Any picks?
I got a pick. So over the weekend, this is kind of a pick classic. And it's an older pick. It's an older thing. So over the weekend on Sunday, yesterday, I had this idea of something I wanted to do for a long time, talking about, you know, and I said, I'm going to do it. We're just going to do it. We're going to do it. And it's a very weird thing, but I thought it was really cool. There is a really great sci-fi video game series called Xenosaga, and it's very cool. It came out in 2003, 2004. Lots of cutscenes, lots of voice acting, you know. There are a lot of games like these sort of really narrative heavy games where, you know, the story, you know, you're there for the story. And sometimes 40 hours to get there doesn't always feel great, you know. We did Final Fantasy IX over the summer, and that took like two and a half months to get to the end of that game. And that story, I think, is very good, but maybe doesn't warrant the time investment. Anyway, so I thought, okay, well, I'm just going to do this. I'm just going to throw the stream on, and we're just going to watch one of these like full movie cuts of this video game on Twitch. And so suddenly we're like, we watched this like seven, 8 hour, I don't know, story about this game. And the game's great, by the way. Xenosaga Episode 1 is a fantastic space opera. And I recommend people play it. But if you don't have the time to play it, much like I don't, or if you just don't have the equipment, right? Like, who has a PS2 anymore? Most people don't. Just go and watch it on YouTube. Like, literally sit down, like, pace yourself out, you know, do an hour at a time or something, and do it. It was a lot of fun to do. We're going to do a few more of those on the stream here. But it was fun to do that with a bunch of people and to do it with this game that is very cool and very weird sci-fi.
Awesome.
I'm very fascinated by where gaming, collaborative gaming, and things like that are going, because we're just scratching the surface of what can be done when you bring a bunch of people in. And we're certainly seeing with, you know, the whole genre of watching people play games, but then the idea of, you know, embarking upon, I don't know. I mean, just mm-hmm. the idea of, you know.
And we were able to, like, you know, this is the first of like three, a trilogy of games. We were able to like sit down and watch this thing all together in one day, which would have taken us 2 or 3 months if we were just doing it, you know, on the stream normally playing through the game. And it's a great story. I want people to know the story. I really want people to know about, you know, the internet and how it runs through heaven and how we have to kill God. You know, I think,
brother, have you heard the word?
Yeah.
So I'll have a link in the show notes for the one that we watched. But like, man, you don't got time to play other video games. There are a lot of these movie cuts on YouTube. So.
You know, Bryce, I'm glad you brought up a multi-hour streaming experience, because I, too, watched one of those this weekend. No, not Xenosaga. The Irishman by Martin Scorsese. I really liked it. I thought it was good. Look, if you are watching this movie, knowing how long it is and knowing the cast, then you know what you're getting. You know what you're getting out of it. This is a 3-hour and 30-minute movie. It's very long. Legendarily, this was something that Scorsese's wanted to make forever. It's a remarkable Robert De Niro performance. It's a great Al Pacino performance. great Joe Pesci performance. I forgot how much I missed Joe Pesci until I see him in this movie. That being said, if you like elements of The Irishman, which deal with deal with the mob and their relationship to the Kennedy family and the relationship that Jimmy Hoffa had to the mob and the Kennedy family, then you will very
Stop. My problem with The Irishman is I hear it's not as fact-based as it could be. They go off on a theory that's maybe been debunked. I need something that's more fact-based, Justin.
Just the facts.
Yeah, I would say that there's not really a ton raised it. And the thing is, I can't really hammer this home too much until I have the audiobook up, because it's the bonus episode that primarily deals with a lot of the intersecting elements. But certainly it is there is a juncture by which you will see dramatized a big moment in the mob episode of Raise the Dead. You will see that, and you will get a sense of exactly how there is a recurring thing in Raise the Dead about how pissed off the unions are at the Kennedys, and you will get a masterclass. That is explored. That's the first half of the movie. It's exactly how pissed off the unions are at the Kennedys because of some of the actions of Bobby Kennedy specifically.
Hmm. So I didn't mean to step on it, but I mean, I was excited by the fact the amount of research you did for Raise the Dead.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it's great. I don't know. It's Scorsese. If you've ever wondered what would happen if you gave Martin Scorsese a ton of money and literally no notes, you would get The Irishman. It's got all the good stuff. The CGI is awesome. We are just in an amazing time right now where you can very realistically de-age these actors in a way that doesn't look like the Polar Express. But it is not distracting at all. Like, you watch that movie, and this is a movie that spans like 70 years, where a large portion of it are Joe Pesci and Robert De Niro and Al Pacino playing themselves at their current age. A lot of stuff where they're younger, some stuff where they're older than they are, and they digitally age them more than they are now. It's awesome.
Wow,
that's great. My pick is going to be, if you're looking for a transcription service, I mentioned this in Weird Things. We'll talk a little bit more just about it. That is Otter.ai, which is available on all sorts of platforms. They've got a 600-minute free tier, which is more than generous, and their paid tier is like $10. There are pretty good, like, on if you don't want to pay for anything and you're on an Android device, Google Recorder, which you can download for. It's being openly supported for more of those devices now, you know, over the next few months. But you can, you know, I loaded one onto a Pixel 2 I had laying around, and the transcription's pretty good, and for real time, costing you nothing. It's actually a pretty good service. In real time, you can watch your words, you know, be converted into text, and with punctuation. That's the thing. There's a lot of note taking apps out there, but they don't add punctuation. And I get people asking me, like, what about Drag and Dictate? Like, it doesn't really do punctuation well. And at least it never did in my experience. And I don't want to have 5,000 words in one long string that I have to go back and play, where should I put the comma? You know? So kind of a big deal. But like, if you're on iOS, you can use, there's some different platforms that service that, including, like I mentioned, Otter.ai.
Nice.
Raise the Dead. It's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.